This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The very definition of oil is changing. If 80% of what's left out there in the world is heavy oil, we need to understand what oil means. And we need to go to places like Kern County to get a good look at what that transition entails.
California's Kern County is the state's primary producer of oil. But the stuff that comes out of the ground in this desert region of Southern California isn't the black liquid many of us imagine rushing like a geyser out of the earth, but a thick, goopy substance that must be forced out of the ground. What do they use to do that? A resource that's nearly as valuable in this dusty corner of California's Central Valley? Water. Our guest this week is Jeremy Miller, an investigative journalist who's written an article in the February issue of Orion magazine. He tells us all about Kern County, how the methods used to extract the cruddy crude are pitting agricultural interests against oil interests, how water is being expended in the endless pursuit of petroleum, and how, by reducing our dependence on oil, we'd also be preventing the waste of that life-giving compound, H2O. They say water and oil don't mix. Today on Sea Change Radio, we discover what happens when they do. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Jeremy Miller. He's an environmental writer whose work has appeared in publications such as High Country News, Boston Globe, the San Francisco Chronicle, Harper's, as well as Orion Magazine. Jeremy, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So the piece I wanted to discuss was one that just appeared in the February issue of Orion Magazine entitled The Colonization of Kern County. Why don't you give us first a quick summary of what Kern County is and what brought you there and why you decided to write about it?
Well, Kern County is a large county in the southern San Joaquin Valley. It's located, if you're thinking of California broadly, sort of roughly halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. It's situated in a very dry part of the state. Normally when people think of Kern County, they think of big agriculture, but big oil plays a big part in the local economy, in the local politics and local culture of Kern County. So I sort of got onto the story when I was, kind of tooling around back there. I'd just seen the movie There Will Be Blood, which is sort of loosely based on the area, and I wanted to see for myself what was going on out there. If there was, I knew that there was, some heavy oil production happening off of one of the main routes that I had driven quite often through there, but never actually gone any further down into the county in search of sort of the history of oil down there. So I took a drive, found out that there was a place called the West Kern Oil Museum in a little town called Taft, which is a little, a small town of about 9,000 people down in the southern, very sort of southwestern corner of the county. And I went in there and said, tell me about the oil history. And the curator is a woman there named Agnes Hart, who told me, the first thing you need to see is actually the places where the oil comes up, bubbles up out of the ground. These are called brea pits and tar pits. And there are actually places in Kern County where this heavy oil, tar, if you will, sort of works its way up through the ground to the surface. And you can, if you know where to look, you can go up and play around with it. And and she explained that those tar pits were the sort of initial lure to the area. So the early workers in the area were using the locations where this tar was bubbling up out of the ground as sort of places where they would dig down into the ground and mine for it. This wasn't your standard drill a hole and let the oil gush out kind of oil operations. These guys were mining. They were going down deep underground, picks and shovels, and dredging oil out by the barrelful.
So when you went to learn about oil, you also ended up learning maybe more about the water issues.
oil drilling over the decades has changed pretty dramatically down there. Like I said, they started out by digging holes in the ground and dredging it up with buckets, and then eventually cable tool drilling came in, and rotary drilling, where they're conventional drilling. The kind of oil that they first started getting out of Kern County was kind of what we think of as traditional kind of oil. There are sections of light, sweet crude oil, the kind of oil that when you poke a hole in the ground, it kind of flows up nicely out of the ground like olive oil or something. And the big oil companies down there, Standard Oil, Union Oil of California, hit several big gushers. And this was back in the early 1900s. These gushers were sort of the thing that touched off the black gold rush to the region. And so you had a mass movement of people into the region going for this oil. Tent camps popped up overnight. But that oil was fairly quickly depleted in the area. The light sweet oil doesn't make up a large proportion, or didn't make up a large proportion of Kern County's oil stocks. What they have in great quantities down there, great but dwindling quantities, is this heavy oil. And heavy oil is more like a semi-solid material.
You'd describe it in the article as like cold mayonnaise.
Cold mayonnaise, right? Yeah, one oil producer that we talked to down there said he liked to describe it as liver in a meat case. You know, it's like it's a thick, gooey, muddy, nasty stuff. And so you can walk to these outcrops and you could play with it, and it behaves more like mud than oil. So that's a big problem if that's the kind of thing that you're trying to get up out of the ground.
And how do you get it out of the ground?
That's the great question. And it turns out the answer to that is water. And of course, water is the linchpin that sort of holds everything together in Kern County. It's a major agricultural hub, but water is the way that you get this oil up out of the ground. Water converted to steam. Shell Oil back in the 60s pioneered a process called steam flooding, where they take water, run it through a boiler, and pump it underground, and that steam effectively reduces the viscosity of the oil, loosens it, gets it moving through the pipes and up to the surface.
When you talk about the oil industry needing water, it's not just water. It's a lot of water. Why don't you speak to the volumes that we're talking about in Kern County and maybe in general?
Yeah, it's hard to put a definite number on it because oil companies, by law, aren't forced to disclose how much water they're taking from external sources to do steam flooding. But my research revealed a few pretty eye-popping facts. In the main part of the oil fields, the water district that serves the main part of the oil fields is called the West Kern Water District, and they are a member unit of the Kern County Water Agency. So the Kern County Water Agency is one of the largest water distributors in the world. The Kern County Water Agency commands about 1 million acre feet of water. And when we're talking about an acre feet, an acre foot is the amount of water it would take to cover 1 acre in a foot of water. So it's a very large amount of water. And the water that they distribute comes from the State Water Project. And the main conduit of that is the California Aqueduct, which brings water from Northern California, the Delta, Sacramento, San Joaquin Bay Delta, down to these various districts. So the Kern County Water District or Water Agency is one district that serves that area. They distribute to 13 member units. One of those member units is the West Kern Water District. The West Kern Water District, which serves the main part of the oil fields, gives 83% of its allocation to oil companies. So its allocation is about 31,000 acre feet. So about, you know, roughly 26 to 28,000 acre feet of its overall allocation goes to oil companies for the purposes of doing steam flooding, for the purposes of making oil loose enough to push through well bores and up to the surface.
And it has to be fresh water, right?
It does. It's this is sort of the hiccup of the technology. The steam flooding setup is sort of like, you can kind of think of it as your coffee maker at home. If you pour dirty water into your coffee maker, you're going to get things precipitating out on the heating elements. You're going to get a white crust, right? Well, the same thing with steam flooding. These are, in essence, giant boilers. So if you're putting dirty water into that system, you're going to get lime scale buildup on your steam injectors. So they have to use clean water. There's an incentive for them to look for constant and reliable sources of fresh water. And the main source of fresh water in that region is the California Aqueduct. Oil companies do claim to be recycling a fair amount of their produced water. Produced water is this water that naturally comes up with the oil. It's part of the oil production process.
But that's not exactly clean
that
water.
That is not clean, no. And so the problem that oil companies run into is that it becomes a dollar and cents issue. It's very expensive to treat this produced water. In extreme cases, I was talking to a guy who operates once operated a power plant. His name is Matt Trask. He's an energy analyst in, I think he's in Sacramento now. And he told me that the cost of treating water can sometimes exceed the cost of buying clean water off the open market by 10 times. Oil companies are, you know, it's a dollars and cents issue. If it's cheaper to buy water off the open market than it is to clean up your own mess, then there's going to be an incentive there for you to, you know, become a player on the water scene. And oil companies are definitely large takers in Kern County. And one consequence of this is that the dirty water that they're generating naturally through the process of oil production, because this oil sits down in old marine formations and there's ancient salt briny water down within the formations, that water that comes up, oil companies are discarding en masse, pumping it into these massive evaporation pits that are strewn across the county. In the early morning, you can see the steam rising up off of these things. Some of these things are just massive, you know, much bigger than football fields. And there are, I was told by a water regulator, thousands of these evaporation pits down in Kern County. So it's sort of, I think, unconscionable to think in a time of drought in such a water-starved area that that oil companies are producing these huge amounts of dirty water, not cleaning it up, dumping it, and buying huge quantities of clean water off the open market to push oil around underground.
You know, I try to get a woman everything and what she need. That's why she don't do nothing, man, but lay up in the bed and read. You know, she walk just like she got all wells in her backyard. You never hear a woman who been hollering and crying. No man talking about these times being hard.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is environmental writer Jeremy Miller, and we're discussing his piece that appeared in Orion Magazine in February of 2011 called The Colonization of Kern County. Why does Kern County matter to Californians and Americans in terms of produce and the food they eat?
Yeah, well, Kern County is a breadbasket, a vegetable, what are they, the salad bowl of the United States. It's a vital part of our agricultural system. Some would argue that it's unsustainable in the way that it's being managed right now. It's heavily irrigated. It's much more arid than some of the agricultural regions further north and in wetter parts of the country, but it is a major agricultural hub for the country. When you've got this kind of this resource conflict over this one vital commodity in this extremely arid part of the world, it could potentially destabilize everything there. If you get enough years of drought, you know, this fight over water is the defining issue for that area.
And just driving from Los Angeles to San Francisco or back on Highway 5, you're going to see a lot of signs by disgruntled farmers and other citizens saying, Congress created Dust Bowl. Why don't you try to help them understand the many elements that have created this Dust Bowl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so these are big New Deal infrastructure projects that put people back to work, that brought water to this desert part of the state, that sort of made the desert bloom. But the problem is that it's an idea that has grown to such a scale and such complexity, and is so predicated on this scarce and becoming scarcer resource, water.
And this is not a little bit of oil in terms of the U.S. production, right? How does Kern County stack up in terms of an oil-producing region?
Kern County is not the largest, but it's still one of the largest. It accounts for roughly 8% of U.S. domestic production, down from about 10% in the last decade.
That's a significant amount when you consider the controversy surrounding drilling in Anwar in Alaska, which they say possibly could have 1% or 2% of the U.S. production.
Yeah. Kern County is much larger in terms of what's been taken from there and what remains. It's not insignificant, but it's dwindling.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is environmental writer Jeremy Miller, and we're discussing his piece that appeared in the February 2011 Orion magazine. It's entitled The Colonization of Kern County. Why the colonization of Kern County? What did you mean by that?
That title is adapted from a quote given to me by a professor at University of California, Bakersfield, named Jan Gillespie. She teaches geology there, but had worked in the oil industry. And I asked her, what is happening in Kern County? Why are there these big billion-dollar industries here, and why am I seeing so much poverty? And she told me that it's obviously not an illusion, and that big corporations have always functioned in Kern County in the way that a colonial power might function in an undeveloped country. Kern County is rich in resources, and for 150 years, extractive industry and agriculture have taken more than obviously they've given back to Kern County.
Well, I was thinking of 11C, which you refer to in the article, which was a Standard Oil of California little mini city. You hear about these enormous corporate cities that have been built in places like Saudi Arabia, and if that oil's drying up, which a lot of people like energy trader Matthew Simmons chronicles in Twilight in the Desert, and there's more and more water being injected into the great oil fields of Saudi Arabia like Ghawar, you're going to see these little mini cities evaporate, and that's what you saw in Kern County, right?
Once the resource is gone, there's nothing keeping oil corporations there, and there's very little of permanence has been built in these places. So it really is. It's almost like cities are sort of evaporating, drying up in the desert as the oil disappears.
For people who think that capitalism is the solution for everything and privatization is an answer, these are almost privatized cities.
Right. Yeah. And it's very interesting because one of the mantras of the push for say natural gas drilling across the country or increased domestic drilling is that it's going to create all of these jobs. And you go into a place like Taft. When I was out last January, the unemployment rate in the city of Taft was around 19%. That was nearly double what the national average was. So it makes you ask, where are the jobs?
These extraction techniques should be exploding as oil starts to rise in price. It's one of these vicious cycles. As the oil becomes higher in price, all of a sudden you see these places where it's has more of a degradation on the land. But there's a lot of externalities associated with this, which you saw in Kern County, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think one parallel that you can draw to Kern County is the tar sands in Alberta. Obviously, strip mining is the operative way that they're getting most of that oil up out of the ground in Alberta. In Kern County, the oil is of a similar nature. It's heavy, it's thick. It takes lots of water to get it up out of the ground, as we discussed. But yeah, I mean, Kern County is emblematic of a general shift in the across the world toward these inferior crude oil sources.
And for listeners who are wondering why their oil is going through the Libyan problem right now, there's also real concern that that light sweet crude, which Libya is known for, is going to cause a problem for the airline industry. They can't use this heavier oil that comes from places like Kern County, correct?
Yeah, it's heavy oil is not only hard to get up out of the ground, but it's not as useful in certain ways as light sweet oil, like the kind that you're talking about in Libya is. It's a lot harder to refine.
What is it used for? Is this turned into gas?
You can turn it into gas, yeah. And one way you can sort of track the progress and studies that I've seen that are tracking this mass transition to unconventional or heavy oil sources, they don't go out into the oil fields and look and like I did in Kern County. They look at refineries, and what you can see worldwide is a trend toward building new refineries that are capable of processing heavy oil sources. And one thing that you can look for are refineries undergoing retrofits for what they called delayed coker units, which are these sort of heaters that are able to cook out the impurities, solids, the metals out of the oil. And if you look across the world, there are huge numbers of refineries being built with delayed cokers or are being retrofitted with delayed cokers to process this heavy oil.
But it's obviously capital intensive. So at $30 a barrel, it doesn't make any sense economically, but at $150 a barrel,
yeah,
you're going to see more and more of these kind of techniques take
Yeah,
off.
Absolutely. And it's that refinement brings with it its own set of waste issues. When you're refining heavy oil, you get this massive waste stream of what's called petroleum coke, and that petroleum coke can be filled with things like heavy metals, sulfur, toxics, and that becomes a disposal issue, sort of like coal ash from a coal-burning power plant. The challenges of transferring over to heavy oil are massive, and they're not, I don't think as a society we've really fully come to terms with the idea of just what that means. The very definition of oil is changing. If 80% of what's left out there in the world is heavy oil, we need to understand what oil means, and we need to go to places like Kern County to get a good look at what that transition entails. In Kern County, it's the landscape has been turned into an oilscape. It looks like it's an industrial life support system is the way that I describe it in the story. Without water, the whole thing falls apart. In Kern County, when oil peaked in the mid-80s, it took roughly 4.5 barrels of water converted to steam to produce one barrel of oil.
And now?
And now that ratio has jumped to almost 8 barrels of water for one barrel of oil. So it's not just that we're it's diminishing returns in terms of oil, but it's taking a whole lot more water to get that little bit of oil that remains.
Surety, yeah. Don't forget your history. Know your destiny in the abundance of water. The food is thirsty.
This is Alex Wise. My guest on Sea Change Radio is environmental writer Jeremy Miller, and we're discussing the push and pull between water and oil interests in Kern County, California. So people who are eager to have their community turned into an oil extraction area where there are jobs, there's also going to be education surrounding that. I remember you discussing in the article the Oil Academy. It's not necessarily so simple that you go to this oil academy where the oil is taken from in your local neighborhood and then you get a job. It doesn't work that way all the time, does it?
It doesn't, no. And it's the amazing thing about the town of Taft, which is where my reporting is centered, is that people know that oil's been in decline for 25 years, but they still see oil as the great shining hope of the region. When I first started visiting, talk was of Occidental's new find in this part of the oil fields called the Elk Hills. And, you know, when you looked, people were talking about it. Oh, yeah, Occidental had this big find. There's going to be jobs. There's going to be opportunity. You know, the town was buzzing. The boom was on again. But when you looked at the numbers, it was a relatively small amount of oil compared to taken. It's not going to be the savior of Taft, but there's still the idea. It's just, we just got to wait till the next boom.
And the higher paying jobs are going to be going to people from big city universities and other PhDs in petrogeochemists and other people involved in it who may not be local graduates of the Taft Oil Academy.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it could be a Harvard trained or an MIT trained geophysicist who lives in San Ramon who's calling the shots. I actually had a chance to visit the Oil Academy, and kids are buzzing about the oil industry there. You know, it's the first high school in the nation that created specifically to train kids to go into the field of oil. And a lot of these kids, not surprisingly, have parents that work in the industry. And, you know, if you look at the graduation numbers and everything, though, you see that, you know, they've had a few graduates go on to work in the oil fields, but a lot of them, you know, don't go into the oil industry just because it's, you know, if the idea was for them to be able to come back to Taft and live and raise a family and work in the oil fields, those opportunities just really aren't there anymore. It really is. It's emblematic, though. It's like it's oil. A good portion of people in the town of Taft have given themselves over to the fact that if oil doesn't save them, nothing will.
So my guest has been environmental writer Jeremy Miller, who's written for the High Country News, Boston Globe, San Francisco Chronicle, and Harper's. And his article we just discussed was The Colonization of Kern County in Orion Magazine, February 2011 issue. Jeremy, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Beck, Lightning Hopkins, Bob Marley and the Wailers. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Sungevity Home Solar Specialists and Incredible Adventures, an eco-friendly outdoor travel company. Go to incadventures.com to learn more. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.